tender flame. Tales of Romance. I'm Ardell, reading The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery. Chapter 18. Valency was acquainted with Barney by now, well acquainted it seemed, though she had spoken to him only a few times. But then she had felt just as well acquainted with him the first time they had met. She had been in the garden at twilight, hunting for a few stalks of white narcissus for Sissy's room, when she heard that terrible old gray slossom come down through the woods from Mistewis. One could hear it miles away. Valency did not look up as it drew near, thumping over the rocks in the crazy lane. She had never looked up, though Barney had gone racketing past every evening since she had been at Roaring Abel's. This time he did not racket past. The old gray Slosson stopped with even more terrible noises than it made going. Valency was conscious that Barney had sprung from it and was leaning over the ramshackle gate. She suddenly straightened up and looked into his face. Their eyes met. Valency was suddenly conscious of a delicious weakness. Was one of her heart attacks coming on? But this was a new symptom. His eyes, which she had always thought brown, were now seen close of a deep violet, translucent and intense. Neither of his eyebrows looked like the other. He was thin, too thin. She wished she could feed him up a bit. She wished she could sew the buttons on his coat and make him cut his hair and shave every day. There was something in his face. One hardly knew what it was. Tiredness? Sadness? Disillusionment? He had dimples in his thin cheeks when he smiled. All these thoughts flashed through Valency's mind in that one moment, while his eyes looked into hers. "Good evening, Miss Sterling." Nothing could be more commonplace and conventional, and anyone might have said it. But Barney Snaith had a way of saying things that gave them poignancy. When he said good evening, you felt that it was a good evening, and that it was partly his doing that it was. Also, you felt that some of the credit was yours. Valency felt all this vaguely, but she couldn't imagine why she was trembling from head to foot. Oh, it must be her heart. If only he didn't notice. "I'm going over to the port," Barney was saying. "Can I acquire merit by getting or doing anything there for you or Sissy?" "Will you get some salt codfish for us?" said Valency. It was the only thing she could think of. Roaring Abel had expressed a desire that day for a dinner of boiled salt codfish. When her knights came riding to the Blue Castle, Valency had sent them on many a quest, but she had never asked any of them to get her salt codfish. "Certainly. You're sure there's nothing else? Lots of room in Lady Jane Grey Slosson. And she always gets back sometime, does Lady Jane?"
"I don't think there's anything more," said Valency. She knew he would bring oranges for Sissy anyhow. He always did. Barney did not turn away at once. He was silent for a little. Then he said slowly and whimsically, "Miss Sterling, you're a brick. You're a whole cartload of bricks. To come here and look after Sissy? Under the circumstances."
"Well, there's nothing so bricky about that," said Valency. "I'd nothing else to do, and I like it here. I don't feel as if I'd done anything specially meritorious. Mr. Gay is paying me fair wages. I never earned any money before, and I like it."
It seemed so easy to talk to Barney Snaith some way, this terrible Barney Snaith of the lurid tales and mysterious past, as easy and natural as if talking to herself.
"All the money in the world couldn't buy what you're doing for Sissy Gay," said Barney. "It's splendid and fine of you, and if there's anything I can do to help you in any way, you have only to let me know. If Roaring Abel ever tries to annoy you..."
"Oh, he doesn't. He's lovely to me. I like Roaring Abel," said Valency frankly.
So do I, but there's one stage of his drunkenness. Perhaps you haven't encountered it yet. When he sings ribald songs.
Oh, yes, he came home last night like that. Sissy and I just went to our room and shut ourselves in where we couldn't hear him. He apologized this morning. I'm not afraid of any of Roaring Abel's stages.
Well, I'm sure he'll be decent to you, apart from his inebriated yowls, said Barney, and I've told him he's got to stop damning things when you're around.
Why?
Asked Valency, slyly, with one of her odd, slanted glances, and a sudden flake of pink on each cheek, born of the thought that Barney Snaith had actually done so much for her.
I often feel like damning things myself.
For a moment, Barney stared. Was this elfin girl the little old maidish creature who had stood there 2 minutes ago? Surely there was magic and deviltry going on in that shabby, weedy old garden. Then he laughed.
Well, it will be a relief to have someone to do it for you then, so you don't want anything but salt codfish.
Not tonight, but I dare say I'll have some errands for you very often when you go to Port Lawrence. I can't trust Mr. Gay to remember to bring all the things I want.
Barney had gone away then in his Lady Jane, and Valency stood in the garden for a long time. And since then he had called several times, walking down through the barrens, whistling. How that whistle of his echoed through the spruces on those June twilights. Valency caught herself listening for it every evening, rebuked herself, and then let herself go. Why shouldn't she listen for it? He always brought Sissy fruit and flowers. Once he brought Valency a box of candy. The first box of candy she had ever been given. It seemed sacrilege to eat it. She found herself thinking of him in season and out of season. She wanted to know if he ever thought about her when she wasn't before his eyes, and if so, what? She wanted to see that mysterious house of his back on the Mistowis Island. Sissy had never seen it. Sissy, though she talked freely of Barney and had known him for 5 years, really knew little more of him than Valency herself.
But he isn't bad, said Sissy. Nobody need ever tell me he is. He can't have done a thing to be ashamed of.
Then why does he live as he does? Asked Valency. To hear somebody defend him.
I don't know. He's a mystery. And of course, well, there's something behind it, but I know it isn't disgrace. Barney Snaith simply couldn't do anything disgraceful, Valency.
Valency was not so sure. Barney must have done something sometime. He was a man of education and intelligence. She had soon discovered that in listening to his conversations and wrangles with Roaring Abel, who was surprisingly well-read and could discuss any subject under the sun when sober. Such a man wouldn't bury himself for 5 years in Muskoka and live and look like a tramp, if there were not too good or bad a reason for it. But it didn't matter. All that mattered was that she was sure now that he had never been Sissy Gay's lover. Well, there was nothing like that between them, though he was very fond of Sissy and she of him, as anyone could see. But it was a fondness that didn't worry Valency.
You don't know what Barney has been to me these past 2 years, Sissy had said simply. Everything would have been unbearable without him.
Sissy Gay is the sweetest girl I ever knew, and there's a man somewhere I'd like to shoot if I could find him, Barney had said savagely.
Barney was an interesting talker, with a knack of telling a great deal about his adventures and nothing at all about himself. There was one glorious rainy day when Barney and Abel swapped yarns all the afternoon, while Valency mended tablecloths and listened. Barney told weird tales of his adventures with shacks on trains while hoboing it across the continent. Valency thought she ought to think his stealing rides quite dreadful, but didn't. The story of his working his way to England on a cattle ship sounded more legitimate, and his yarns of the Yukon enthralled her.
especially the one of the night he was lost on the divide between the Gold Run and the Sulphur Valley. He had spent 2 years out there. Where in all this was there room for the penitentiary and the other things? If he were telling the truth. But Valency knew he was. "Found no gold," he said, "came away poorer than it went. But such a place to live. Those silences at the back of the north wind got me. I've never belonged to myself since." Yet he was not a great talker. He told a great deal in a few well-chosen words. How well-chosen Valency did not realize. And he had a knack of saying things without opening his mouth at all. "I like a man whose eyes say more than his lips," thought Valency. But then she liked everything about him. His tawny hair, his whimsical smiles, the little glints of fun in his eyes, his loyal affection for that unspeakable Lady Jane, his habit of sitting with his hands in his pockets, his chin sunk on his breast, looking up from under his mismated eyebrows. She liked his nice voice, which sounded as if it might become caressing or wooing, with very little provocation. She was at times almost afraid to let herself think these thoughts. They were so vivid that she felt as if others must know what she was thinking. "I've been watching a woodpecker all day," he said one evening on the shaky old back veranda. His account of the woodpecker's doings was satisfying. He had often some gay or cunning little anecdote of the wood folk to tell them. And sometimes he and Roaring Abel smoked fiercely the whole evening, and never said a word, while Sissy lay in the hammock swung between the veranda posts, and Valency sat idly on the steps, her hands clasped over her knees, and wondered dreamily if she were really Valency Stirling, and if it were only 3 weeks since she had left the ugly old house on Elm Street. The barrens lay before her in a white moon splendor where dozens of little rabbits frisked. Barney, when he liked, could sit down on the edge of the barrens and lure those rabbits right to him by some mysterious sorcery he possessed. Valency had once seen a squirrel leap from a scrub pine to his shoulder and sit there chattering to him. It reminded her of John Foster. But one of the delights of Valency's new life was she could read John Foster's book as often and as long as she wanted to. She read them all to Sissy, who loved them. She also tried to read them to Abel and Barney, who did not love them. Abel was bored. Barney politely refused to listen at all. "Piffle," said Barney. Please join me next time for another romantic chapter of The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery, here on Love's Tender Flame. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.